Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Bring it back.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, thanks for having me on again, Kev. I'm Steve McGookin, and I'm a former chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club.
Hi, I'm Richard Burns. I am a Manchester City fan and a member of the Blue Moon podcast, which is a dedicated Manchester City podcast. And it's great to be on for the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah, you were absent for a little while. You had a little affair of a wedding to attend to, but we're glad to finally have you back. And congratulations once more, Steve. Always a pleasure to have you on as well. Unfortunately, though, Richard, we have to start by talking about Manchester City. The loss yesterday makes it now 14 points between you and Liverpool at the top of the table. What do you think has kind of caused this dip, if you will, and what would it take to get back into title contending form, if not this season, beyond?
Well, the first point and the sort of the obvious point to jump to is the injury to Emerick Laporte that he got against Brighton on August 31st, which already seems a lifetime ago. And he's such an important defender and such a good defender that, you know, any team would miss such a pivotal player. And there's no doubt that City have really, really missed him. But it's not just because he's missing. It's the knock-on impact that it's had. Plus, it highlights how poor City's transfer business was in the summer. So that's not to say that the signings they did make were not good ones. Rodri is looking like a very good signing. He's far from perfect, but he's still got a lot of settling in to do. And what we have seen from him suggests that he'll settle in fine once he's got a bit more used to the Premier League. But they didn't sign a centre-back. They didn't sign a centre-back knowing that Vincent Kompany had left, which was not just losing a defender, but it was losing the leader of the club. From a playing perspective, it was it meant that it was leaving us with three recognised centre-backs. And one of those is Nicolas Otamendi, who was absolutely fantastic in our 100-point season, but has shown clear signs of regression since then. And he is the wrong side of 30, which obviously doesn't rule out that a player can still be useful. But he's not getting any younger, so you would sort of want maybe a younger player to come in to be sort of filling his shoes anyway. John Stones, who personally I'm still mostly a fan of, but it would be fair to say that for most people, the jury's still out on him. And certainly in the last two seasons where City have been absolutely phenomenal, John Stones has not played much at the back end of the season. And it's sort of well known that one of the doubts about him amongst City's coaching staff is how he reacts to adversity. And so when he's good, he's really, really good. But when he makes a mistake, it can let him affect him. And then Laporte is the best and, I suppose, senior centre-back. It was always a risk knowing that if we took an injury, we'd be light in that department. And we ended up taking two because after Laporte's injury, Stones also missed a few weeks. What that has done is it has forced Pep to put Fernandinho at centre-back. And the talk now is that Fernandinho has accepted that he's played his last game in midfield, which I'm always wary of saying stuff like this because who on earth am I to question the football mind of Pep Guardiola? But even so, that seems like a serious blind spot to me, because although it's true that with Fernandinho in midfield, we're left with two centre-backs whose form fluctuates at best. In Otamendi's case, it tends to be pretty consistent these days and not for good reason. It's great to have Fernandinho, who, to be honest, most of the time he plays, he is our best centre-back, but we lose what he offers in midfield. So the defence is always exposed. Particularly, Rodri was injured as well, and that means that Gundogan is playing in a really deep midfield position. And Gundogan's a very, very good footballer, but in that City team, he does not have a niche. He's not a great defensive midfielder. He's not a great attacking midfielder. And City already have those things. So he doesn't have an obvious role. And when he's forced to play it, I mean, Pep absolutely loves him. When he's forced to play consistently in a role that doesn't necessarily fit what should be his niche in the team, the team doesn't really prosper from that, if that makes sense. And so personally, I think that there's a blind spot for Pep here where he needs to start to acknowledge that actually having Fernandinho protecting the defence and stopping them facing these balls over the top that are catching City out time and time again, it would be better to have Fernandinho screening that rather than have the balls coming over the top, because there isn't a capable player in midfield to stop that happening, and leaving Fernandinho and Stones or Otamendi to deal with it, because it just puts so much pressure on the back line that we're not coping with at the moment. We lose what Laporte offers on the left side of defence in terms of leadership. I think that's a real big problem when you see Angelino, because his performances are really, really poor. Yesterday, I mean, I don't want to be rude about the guy because there was no lack of effort, but he was playing like he'd won a competition to be there. And to be honest, maybe a competition that he'd finished quite far down and somehow ended up winning by default anyway. I don't know. He was not good. It seemed with every single United attack, he seemed to be giving them more space. And we're just dreadfully exposed. And then add on to that we look relatively blunt going forward. And I say that knowing that we've still scored a decent amount of goals, although that is inflated by the 8-0 win that we had over Watford. But in recent games, there's a really clear pattern that teams sitting deep against us, they do a really good job of blunting what City have to offer going forward. The possession's still all there, but there's far less threat of an end product. And you can see that pattern settling in really quite early in games now. And the best plan B that we have is to start banging balls in from out wide to our very, very small attacking players. And that's because we are always waiting on the second ball. And you know that once we start doing that, you know that that's when the team has started to accept that they can't beat the defensive block. And it's just so at odds with the last two seasons that you have to sort of say, we've been worked out a little bit now. And I think you asked what needs to happen to correct this for next season. Well, we need clearly another centre-back. We probably need somebody else who can play the defensive midfield role, because at the moment it's not clear whether Fernandinho will even be here next season. He's out of contract. Rodri can't do that on his own. I think we need to start using this opportunity now, because the title's gone. I mean, that's unquestionable. There's no route back into a title race now. So we need to start using this to give the likes of Manu Garcia and Phil Foden a chance in the first team. And that doesn't mean they need to start every week or that we need to write the whole season off, but they do need to get used to playing more football in the first team, I think. And we're going to need, I think, a new striker next season, because Aguero is showing signs of slowing down, and obviously he's injured at the moment. And at any rate, a slowing down Aguero is still better than most strikers in the world. But we know that the season after next, he's almost certainly going to be gone. So we need to start that transition now for replacing him. And it won't be a like-for-like replacement, because like-for-like changes for Aguero aren't out there, because he's such a unique striker. And Gabriel Jesus, I like him, but he's still young, but he's always been, in his time at City, he's always been a very patchy striker, and we need a bit more consistency than that. So I think there's a lot of changes required. The good thing is it's quite exciting, because, you know, Pep hasn't suddenly become a a bad manager overnight, or I don't think he's suddenly lost his touch or anything like that. But I do think we're paying for a couple of transfer windows where we've only made two key signings. We're really still playing with the squad that got 100 points two seasons ago. And you look at that compared to what Liverpool are doing, incredibly sort of fresh. They've made really good transfers. There's a lot that needs to be done. But if we accept now that the title's gone, because it has, it's actually quite exciting to think the pressure's off. Let's look forward to next season by implementing some changes now.
Yeah, pretty comprehensive from Richard there. But Steve, from the outside looking in, what's been your take on City and their struggles this season?
I'll be honest with you. Titles aren't won in December. But to be fair, it looks like it is Liverpool's to lose at the moment. I mean, certainly the form that they're in at the moment and the way in which Klopp has the entire squad, even the peripheral players, sort of ticking and blending, you know, pretty much just right. It's hard to see how City are going to come back to that. But as I say, I mean, you know, anything is possible. And I think another interesting dynamic, and we'll come on to talk about it, I'm sure, in a little bit, is how Leicester fits into the mix there, and what if City's ambition now is to, you know, in the first instance, catch Leicester and then build from that. You can only beat the teams that are in front of you, and you can only take it one game at a time and sort of, you know, try and claw it back. But, you know, titles aren't won in December. But, you know, I do think somebody just said to me, we're recording this tonight on December the 8th, and you can imagine a lot of people in Liverpool are imagine the title tonight. So, Richard, I'm curious. I mean, does this mean now that by default that Pep is going to be prioritizing the Champions League?
Well, just before I answer that, just because I think I sort of should have said this really, and I'm glad that you've prompted me to. The reason that I think the title is gone is not because I think the points gap is too big that it could never, ever be caught up, because three of the four titles that I've been lucky enough to see City win have come from seemingly impossible positions. The difference this year is we're facing a team that have lost one league game in over 50, and now we need them to lose five in 20-odd. They haven't lost at Anfield since April 2017, and it's not even just that. City will drop a lot more points yet, because it's in the performances rather than the points gap that I fear it. And whilst I agree titles aren't won in December, I do think that they can be lost. And that's why I think that this one's a big step too far for City, because there is more defeats in this team yet. Then to answer your question, I'm always a little bit sceptical about the idea of prioritising one competition over another. I think you can see it clearly when it comes to April, if you're still in the quarterfinals and you've got two league games surrounding two Champions League, important Champions League game. I can see where you have to rest your biggest players in the competition that you think less of, or the competition that isn't the biggest priority. But I think it's too early to be having that conversation, because we've already won our group. We've got a complete dead rubber game on Tuesday against Dynamo Kiev that, you know, to all intents and purposes, doesn't mean anything at all. And then we don't have to worry about it again until February. So I would be concerned if squad selections are made before April that have the Champions League in mind. I would always hope for good resource management to, it's a bit of a overly clinical phase, but I would always hope that we would guard against players burning out, and God knows at least in the attacking positions we've got the squad to largely do that with. Even with Aguero's injury, if we need to rest Jesus, I think that Raheem Sterling's future probably lies in a more central position. I think that's the development that he's making, so now's a good time to start trying that out, I think, giving the odd game in a more central striking, you know, traditional sort of striker's role. Come April, if we're still in the Champions League and assuming that the gap in the Premier League is still significant, which I'm absolutely certain that it will be, then the Champions League games will take priority. But at the moment, I don't think that's something that that we should be thinking about, or that Pep needs to be thinking about. I think he'll still be desperate to win every game, and actually, the Premier League has to be a key focus, because we don't want to. You know, it's one thing losing to a great team, and make no mistake about it, this Liverpool team are fantastic. They're going to break records this season. There's a good chance that they will beat our 100-point record. And I wouldn't even go so far as to say it's unlikely at this point that they'll do a season unbeaten. I think there's a reasonable chance at that, because they've just got everything going for them in a way that not many teams ever have. But we still have to try and mount we still have to do the best job of keeping on their coattails as we can. We don't want to just give the league up. There's a difference between accepting that something's unlikely and just giving it up and sort of phoning it in, which I realise isn't what you were suggesting City would do. But to me, that's sort of what it means when you start prioritising stuff in December. So yeah, short answer is, not yet, but we'll probably prioritise in April. But long answer is, I'm not a big believer in prioritising one competition over another anyway, when you've got a squad that's good enough to be honest, it should be good enough to do the business in both competitions.
Interesting stuff for sure. As we kind of continue our topics being related to the guests that are on, Steve, I'm sure you'd be delighted to talk about Sun Heung-min, who scored an excellent solo goal yesterday. Has been doing stuff like that for a while, of course, and just picked up his third Asian Player of the Year trophy. Is it time to start considering Sun as world-class?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. And yesterday was certainly the best goal I think he's ever scored for us.
Both of them were amazing.
It's a nice problem to have, choosing between goals like that. But I felt sorry for Harry Kane yesterday, because he scored two fantastic goals. I mean, that first one was a worldie in and of itself, and yet nobody wanted to talk about it. Everybody just wanted to talk about Sonny. As far as being called world-class, I mean, I think Son was in the process of becoming a world-class player when he was at Leverkusen. Admittedly, they had a disappointing World Cup in 2014 before he joined us, but you know, I think he's just getting better, and he can only get better now under Jose, and the way Jose's going to use him. And the way Jose's going to use him in combination with Harry and Dele Alli, he's certainly one of the best wingers in the world. If there's a downside, it's probably still that he takes the shot on more than he should, but when it comes off, it's more than spectacular. There's certainly a huge benefit to him playing alongside Harry, the way that and especially if Harry's playing in a slightly deeper role, which he seems to be doing at the moment, and using Son on the wings. The more space he gets, the more he can humiliate you. So I think he is. And it's hard if you look at City, you look at Liverpool, you look at the top three, you know, their front three. Would he get into either of those threes? He might get into the City three. I don't think he would get into the Liverpool three the way things are currently constituted. He's world class in terms that he could walk into any of the small universe of elite clubs anywhere in the world. So definitely he's always been an elite player for me, and he just continues to get better and better. So yesterday was just indicative of the skill that the man has.
Yeah, I really, really like him. I think he's an absolutely fantastic footballer, and I don't know that there's a whole lot I can add to what Steve's already said, but from that sort of outside looking in, he's a joy to watch. You know, he plays, this is a very unscientific way of answering the question about is he world class, but he plays football in a way that I think just makes you happy to watch. He plays football, he plays in the right spirit for the most part. He's a very sort of honest player, is extremely, extremely talented, and I think for a long time has been somewhat underrated. I said, no, everybody knows that he's high quality, but he's never really in those conversations about the world's top footballers, I don't think. But when you see that, the goal this weekend is absolutely magnificent. He's got buckets and buckets of skill. He's so sort of enthusiastic about just being on the pitch and wanting to play and wanting to work hard for his team. And yeah, I think if I don't know that I necessarily would have used the words world class, because that is such a, you know, you try and apply that only to the really, really elite players. But then when I ask myself what team in the world wouldn't want him, what team in the world wouldn't be able to make use of him, and what team in the world wouldn't he be a regular starter? I can't think of many. And so I guess that does tip the balance. So I'd say that I'm starting to think of him as in that top level and as a world-class player. And regardless, he's one of my favourite players in the Premier League. He's a joy to watch, and obviously you guys will know that better than me because you'll see him more regularly than me. But I would say that I'm starting to see that he is world-class.
Yeah, world-class I do realise is a bit of an arbitrary distinction, but that's why I wanted to bring it up, is I feel like if he's not there already, he's getting there very quickly. And I agree, there are some teams that maybe he doesn't always start for, but as you mentioned there, Richard, pretty much every team would want him. His usage at any one of those places may have been a little bit different. But anyway, Son is just a fantastic footballer, and I think he was kind of hidden for a while everybody was excited about, you know, Kane and Dele and Eriksen and the defense. But over this last, you know, all of 2019 that hasn't gone particularly well for Tottenham, Champions League aside, I feel like Son has been one of the most consistently good players in the team and has really been a driving force when we've lacked that.
I think also, Kev, there's another thing to bear in mind is when you talk about somebody being world class, it's kind of difficult when there's a pressure there that when you're like the highest profile player on your national team, that you really don't have any competition from within your own national team, that there's a little bit more of an added sort of weight on your shoulders to represent that country in a way. So, you know, maybe the whole concept of how you describe someone as world-class is different.
Yeah, absolutely fair. Kind of going from a player that we like and obviously as an opponent for Richard, which he probably has nightmares about that Champions League match. But now we're going to talk about an opposing player that you've been most impressed by this season. We'll start with you, Steve.
Well, we mentioned earlier in the start about Leicester being in the mix for the title, or certainly within that sort of top three competition at the moment. And I'm going to go for the reborn Jamie Vardy, 32 years old, and certainly Brendan Rodgers seems to be getting the most out of him at the moment. And also Northern Ireland's own Johnny Evans, who 31 years old and certainly seems to be the anchor behind that Leicester defence at the moment. And then certainly, you know, organising the team around one of those players at the back, one of them up front, has paid just tremendous dividends for Rodgers and for Leicester. I mean, you know, Vardy scored two more goals today, which is, you know, just an amazing run. Leicester are on 9 wins in a row now, and I think in all 9 of those games they've scored more than one goal. So they don't win by, you know, they don't eke out wins. So I've been very impressed with both of them so far this season. If they can stay healthy, then that takes Leicester through into that discussion about the final stages of the season as well. In terms of other players that have particularly impressed me, it's actually two players who I was impressed with last season who I continue to be impressed with. Juan Bissaka at Manchester United, I think, is settling into that right back spot there, and I think he will turn out to be a better close season buy than Harry Maguire, to be honest with you. And also another player that impresses me every time I see him is Ruben Neves at Wolves. I think he has a huge upside and can only get better and better as things go on. And obviously Nuno is getting the best out of him at the moment as well. So, you know, as I say, it's not anybody who sort of joined the league this year or who has come through, but somebody, a couple of players that you always knew were good players and good valuable additions to your squad. But it's good to see them doing well this year.
Yeah, annoyingly, that rather steals my answer, because the one that jumped to my mind was Jamie Vardy, because it's remarkable that he just keeps going and going. Again, a player who, not exactly at the early stage of his career, is he? And he's, if anything, he's getting better. It's incredible, in a really, really good team and a really likeable team. The fact that he's closing in on his own record for consecutive Premier League games scored in, I hope he does it. I mean, it's probably still unlikely, but I'd love him to do that. If I select somebody different, though, just so we've not both just said the same person, I've been really impressed by what I've seen. I'm not going to say I've seen sort of week in, week out, but really impressed by what I've seen of Tammy Abraham. Because it wasn't necessarily obvious that he was going to have a good season. And you could argue that had Chelsea had other options, i.e. had they been able to go into the transfer market, Abraham wouldn't have been the first choice striker. They might have sought to buy in a more established striker and spend a bit of money, but they couldn't do that. And it forced Lampard's hand, and he's doing in the main, a really, really good job with those young players. But Abraham, his first couple of games, he got quite a lot of stick because he wasn't playing fantastic. I think the game at Old Trafford when they got beat 4-0 on the opening day wasn't great. But he's really, really hit form, and he's scoring goals fairly consistently. I think they're quite weighted, if I remember rightly, they're quite weighted that most of his goals come away from home, but that's a pretty solid foundation to be working on anyway. And he's got a good range of finishing about him. He seems to score quite a few different type of goals. And, you know, although he was a highly rated young player, some of his loan moves, he's not looked fantastic, or he's not set the world alight, or not necessarily looked like he was going to make it as a Premier League striker. But he's really, really blossoming in that Chelsea team. And it's nice to see. It's obviously good for England to have another young striker coming through. And yeah, I've been impressed with Lampard's management of that situation, because Chelsea weren't expected to do a whole lot at the start of the season because of the transfer embargo. But Lampard's making the most of it. Obviously, they've had a couple of disappointing results recently. But you'd think they can sort of ride that out. And yeah, it's nice to see. It's surprising to see Chelsea be a quite likeable team. But it's good to see how well those youngsters, obviously Mason Mount's another one, they're doing really well. And I hope Abraham continues in this sort of vein of form, because he's a good player to watch, I think.
That's a good call, Richard. I wouldn't go as far as call Chelsea likeable, to be honest. Having said so, that's a very good point about his loan moves, and it puts me in mind of the number of loan moves that Harry Kane had before he established himself in the team. So there's a similarity there, I think, in terms of, you know, if you can score, it doesn't matter at what level you're doing it, and it's just a matter of sort of fitting back into the scheme of the strategy that your current manager has for you.
Yeah, all excellent points, to be sure. Now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Steve, we'll start off with you. Obviously, the last time we spoke was right around the Pochettino departure and Jose Mourinho hire. We're now a little bit into that. Obviously, we mentioned some concerns about the club identity in terms of the brand of football played and if that would be changed. Thus far in his tenure, Tottenham have scored as many goals as anyone else in the league. What have you made of the play style and brand of football under Jose Mourinho thus far?
You know, Kevin, it feels like, and I said this to a friend of mine just today, but it feels like a weight was lifted off the shoulders of the team that was just too heavy for Poch to manage. And I don't know what the internal dynamics are. Obviously, any new manager coming in will affect that dynamic within the dressing room. But someone like Mourinho, with the reputation that he has and the track record that he has, obviously can come in and talk to these players in terms of he knows what it takes for them to win. He knows what it takes to get the best out of players that he knows are obviously good enough. This is obviously a squad that he knew he could use. And he probably knew that when he took the job that there wasn't going to be an awful lot of resources available to expand the squad. We're starting to hear rumors of potential pickups that he wants to do on the cheap. Relatively speaking. There's talk of him being reunited with Marouane Fellaini, for example. There's also talk of him going back to Man United for Nemanja Matic, and that would make sense. I've heard this. I don't know if you have, but in terms of a potential swap deal for Christian Eriksen, obviously it would be Matic plus cash a consideration for Eriksen to go the other way. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me. Somebody that as experienced as Mourinho, who knows already what players he wants to get or what type of players he wants to get, and he's been around the block so many times that he knows exactly the type of player that he can get to fill a particular role. So that sort of speculation is bound to continue between now and when the transfer window opens. But I think generally speaking, as I say, this weight has been lifted off the players' shoulders. They're playing with a freedom and abandon, a certain sense of a realization that they are good players, which I think they'd lost sight of a little bit towards the end of Poch's time. Obviously, you know, we will gradually learn the full story of the timing, particularly around the move and whether or not it's true that Arsenal were going to move for Mourinho and that sort of forced Levy's hand. I think as you and I said when we had the particular podcast to discuss his departure, it was probably something that we all knew, no matter what our affection for Poch was at the time, we knew something was inevitable, something had to give, there had to be a shakeup at some point. And who better to do it than someone who has a proven track record of success. In terms of the style, you know, anybody who had misgivings about the style that the team would be playing in, I mean, my goodness, I don't know if you heard whoever the host on Final Score was last night when he said, you know, if you're a Spurs fan and your Christmas party is tonight, cancel it so you can stay home and watch Match of the Day. And certainly the team were playing yesterday against Burnley with such freedom, such abandon. I mean, what a crazy game it was. It could have been, you know, 4-2, 4-3 at halftime, for goodness sake. But again, that's the sort of enjoyment that the players clearly had at playing together, which you hadn't seen for a long, long time. And so I think in terms of that influence, the somebody who who clearly has the credentials to say, I know the direction that I want to take this team. I know what the limitations are on the squad that we have, and I know how to work within that. You know, I was a big Poch fan, as you know, Kevin, as were you, but I'm cautiously optimistic as we move forward.
Yeah, it certainly looked bright thus far, although there was a disappointing Manchester United result, but having seen what they've done since, that one I think stings a little bit less. Dele Alli would be the very easy answer, but aside from him, which players do you think have most benefited under the new tutelage of Jose Mourinho?
Well, we were talking about Son earlier, and I think Son has benefited from the fact that Harry's playing a little deeper as well. So, as I said, we were creating more space on either side. We saw it with Moura yesterday as well. But generally, you know, that front four, that Moura, Son, Alli, and Harry Kane combination, he has them clicking now in a way that they did inconsistently with Poch. But when we did click, it was the best thing in the world to watch. I mean, we were just so confident playing with such freedom. And so I suspect that not every game is going to be like yesterday, clearly. But and that's no reflection on Burnley. I mean, I think they just got us on a bad day for them, and they were unlucky. They hit the woodwork a couple of times, which would have got them right back into it. It's funny, when we went 3-0 up, I said to my friend Patrick, I mean, it's time for us to give up two goals now, because that's basically what we'd done in the previous two leagues.
Most dangerous lead in sports, Tottenham 3-0.
when we have it, that's certainly true. But no, I do think if Jose can sort out the back four, if we can resolve the internal dynamics of whatever's affecting the players within the dressing room and might be sort of inhibiting us that way, I think we're building a good platform to move forward, and I'm very happy so far. I love to see us play the way we did yesterday.
Yeah, again, it was certainly a fun time, and we'll see how all these players continue to develop. Allegedly, Troy Parrott getting a chance in the match against Bayern Munich midweek, but we will get to that later in match previews. Richard, coming to you now, much less light of a topic. You've been very outspoken in the past against kind of some of the treatment that players like Raheem Sterling and Yaya Toure have gotten. And now there's a larger scandal with some of the fan base yesterday throwing things at Fred at a corner flag, some video of racist implications, and even outside of the racial issues, a fan mocking the Munich air disaster. Just as somebody that's typically been very outspoken about kind of the behavior within fan bases, what did you make of all that yesterday?
Well, it was awful. It was, I mean, first of all, on the throwing things issue, that was, well, there's something wrong when people get so worked up about a football match that they feel the need to do that. Or that throwing things at somebody because they play for a rival team, and our biggest rival team, and let's have it right, the team that we dislike the most, that you think it's okay to throw things at them. And then in the weird mindset that occurs in these things, City fans then were giving them more and more abuse because they were walking away from taking the corner. Why wouldn't they? Why would they stand there and have their safety endangered doing their job? Just to get the game played quicker, or you know, why? It's really strange to me that people act in that way and then get angry at the consequences of their actions. It's pathetic. But that was, you know, that was beyond stupid. And hopefully, all of those people will be identified, will be punished appropriately, which, you know, in the first instance is obviously being banned from entering a stadium again. And then, you know, I personally think it would be great if they were sort of made an example of, and were sort of, I mean, basically I'd like them to be embarrassed by their actions, because they should be. It embarrasses, to some extent, it embarrasses the club, although I don't go down the line of thinking it's in any way a reflection on City or of any club where people do that, because individuals are individuals and the club can only do so much, and the bigger test is how they deal with it once it occurs, because there's only so much you can do to stop somebody behaving in that way if they've decided that they're going to. On the issue of allegedly mocking the Munich air disaster, and I say allegedly because I've not seen the offence that occurred yesterday, but I've been at plenty of derbies where that has happened. Again, it's brainless, it's senseless, it's pathetic point scoring over something that isn't remotely funny, over something that we should all be above. I would hope that the best thing I can say about that is that I would hope it is some sort of misguided younger person who has just misjudged what is okay to, you know, what's funny, and it's a sign of immaturity rather than it being, you know, I mean, clearly anybody should know better. That isn't to excuse anybody, but I'd at least hope that it's something that somebody's going to grow out of rather than it being adults or, you know, seasoned match goers who are still behaving like that at a derby. That's sort of the best case scenario, is that it's somebody who will learn from it rather than somebody who's acted that way before and will do again. And then on to what I would say is that the most serious of the issues, the racist abuse from the City fans, although it doesn't matter who does it, but in this instance from the City fans, it is extremely concerning that there are people who think that that is an okay way to behave anywhere. But again, the issue now is how not just City deal with it, but how football as a sport, and that includes, that is clubs, it is governing bodies, it is fan bases who need to sort of self-police these things. It's how everybody reacts to this now. And it's been really heartening to see that, certainly on my Twitter feed, that the reaction to this has been one of absolute outrage and condemnation. I thought City's statement, although, you know, I could have written it myself because it was so predictable, because we know what football clubs say when this sort of thing happens. But it was good, it was swift. And hopefully any resulting action will be as well. The perpetrator's apparent employer were tweeting yesterday to say that they were aware of the video circulating and that they would be investigated and taking appropriate action. So it seems that hopefully this person is going to be made an example of. But it's a huge issue, and it's an issue because it's an issue in society. And we're not dealing with it. We have people in positions of power who use alarming language on sort of all manner of issues, but race is sort of chief amongst those, and they do so without consequence. And if anything, a lot of people who behave in this way have been rewarded, seemingly as a result of these words. There's no consequence for saying these things, where previously we know that there's always been bigots and there always will be, but there was almost at least a sense of shame on their part, or at least an understanding that actually their views were not mainstream and were not acceptable to be shared in certain environments. And that was, you know, you can educate people all you want, but if somebody's going to be bigoted, the best you can hope is that they don't, you know, that they don't abuse people or let that eke out into somewhere where it's always going to be unacceptable. And the fact that there's a rising number of occurrences of this in football stadiums. You know, we've seen some of the problems in Italy, where it seems it's almost every other week that we're hearing of racist abuse of players. We need to not let this become a recurring theme in England, or rather stop it, you know, nip it in the bud, I suppose. One thing that I wanted to say is that one of the lines that we hear very, very often when things like this occur is people will say, the person who has done that is not a real football fan, or fans of a certain club. So in this case, City, it's dead easy for me to say, oh, well, that person isn't a real City fan and they don't represent the club. Of course they don't represent the club, but that person being a bigot and racially abusing someone doesn't stop them being a City fan, and it doesn't stop them being a football fan. Those two things aren't mutually exclusive. And although saying those things is well-intentioned, because the people saying that clearly want to distance themselves from those viewpoints and from that behaviour, it's actually an exercise in incredible cognitive dissonance to say that person doesn't enjoy the same thing as me, because then you remove yourself of the responsibility to deal with it, and you get to say they are not in on this thing that I am in on. They are other, they are different to me, and actually they're not. They share an interest and they hold these abhorrent views. And if you just distance yourself from it, then you don't have to take any action. And actually what we need to say is, there are football fans in stadiums behaving in this way. What do we do about it? Now, I don't have the answer. Like, I think a course of education and getting to these things at the sort of root level is better than having a situation where we have to make examples of people who do these things, because prevention is always going to be better than cure. But once it happens, you have to be swift in dealing with it. You know, personally, I think that kind of offence should come with a custodial sentence, and I hope that is what happens to the perpetrator. But yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can say to really get across how abhorrent it is that somebody would feel it appropriate to behave in that manner. And I also have to say, I would say that it's evident from his behaviour that he's not a very intelligent person anyway. But how thick do you have to be to do that on the front row of what will be one of the most watched events in the world this weekend, with hundreds of millions of people watching that around the world? And he's chosen to do it in an exact moment that you could reasonably predict the camera's going to be pointed on your area of the stadium. So it just speaks further to the stupidity of the man. It has to be dealt with. There has to be significant punishment. I think at this stage, there isn't a great history of it at City. It's the first offence of a fan committing something like this, or the first, you know, the first one that we know about that's come out. So I would hope that it's a case of the FA working with the club rather than necessarily punishing the club for this, which I'm sure will be the case. But eventually, for repeated behaviour, then maybe clubs do have to be punished to sort of set an example and force that self-policing. Because, you know, well, yeah, I'll talk forever if I don't stop. But obviously, it comes with my full condemnation.
Yeah, obviously a very disappointing moment for football, and it sounds like you're certainly disappointed in those actors that are unfortunately part of the football community. As you said, it's very easy to try to distance, but it's here in society, it's here in sports, and unfortunately we're nowhere near where we should be yet, but hopefully things will improve with time and education.
I just wanted to absolutely associate myself with everything that Richard just said there, and pluck out one thing that resonated with me particularly, and this is this notion of no consequences. People believe that their actions now don't have consequences, and I think that's a very worrying thing that we're seeing more and more of in all aspects of public discourse. But I absolutely agree with you. I think the really sad thing about all of this is we know this isn't going to be the last time that we have this conversation. So it is incumbent on all of us as football fans to understand what we in our limited ways can do about it as individuals, as fans, as clubs, as national teams, as FAs. And as governing bodies. And I think this is something that football has been wrestling with for a long while and will continue, unfortunately, to do so, but needs to do so in a much more efficient way, I think. So, I just really wanted to echo everything that Richard said, and he put it very articulately.
From there, we will move on into Player Watch, where we're going to be talking about players that might get a bit more playing time now as we head into the busy winter period. Steve, we'll start off with you in Tottenham.
In terms of players that I think will get more playing time with. Now, this is the interesting thing. Whenever a new manager comes in, there's always this sort of sense that they want to see all the players, want to see all the peripheral fringe players in your squad. Mourinho is the sort of coach that he already knows who our players are. He knows who he wants. He knows who he thinks he can get more out of. What I was very encouraged by yesterday, and I don't know if you saw this on your coverage of the game, Kev, was he took the match ball from Sonny at the end of the game and he gave mm-hmm. it to Troy Powell, who had come on for his Premier League debut, and actually making him the youngest player in the Premiership this season. So that was a very encouraging sign, and I hope that he will sort of bring through some of the younger players, Oliver Skip and Kyle Walker-Peters, and give them a similar sort of opportunity, especially as we sort of move forward through some of the Christmas period. He also, I think, needs to take a look at Lo Celso and Sessegnon and get a little bit more of an exposure to them. But I think really, deep down, and you and I have talked about this before, it's really finding an optimum partnership in that midfield position. We've got Dier, we've got Winks, we've got Ndombele, we've got Sissoko. I don't think he's actually seen Wanyama perform at any level, but I think it's a matter of, as he evaluates the different partnerships and the different combinations that he can use in that midfield position, that I think we'll get more of a sense after Christmas, and especially, as I say, there's this sort of wild card of who does he go out and get in the Christmas transfer window or the New Year transfer window. But I think it's a matter for him really at the moment to evaluate the partnerships in midfield and see what he's the most comfortable with at the moment. I mean, obviously he seems to be a big fan of Eric Dier because he gives him that flexibility. But we'll see. I think we'll see a lot more of Ndombele as well, I think, going forward. But that's the area that I think we're sort of most uncertain about going forward.
Gotcha. And Richard, getting back to the footballing aspect of the show, who at City do you think is going to get more minutes? Obviously, Jesus has been the biggest beneficiary of the Aguero injury and has lived up to his name pretty well.
Yeah, he's done all right. He was really, really good at Burnley, which was very, very encouraging to see. Two great goals and a really good performance. I think the one for getting more minutes that we really need to look at now, and it's probably the obvious name to go for, but it's got to be Phil Foden. And there's a few reasons for that now, I think. One is, as I said earlier, so I'll try not to repeat the point too much, but the Premier League would-be title race now comes with more with less pressure than we would have expected it to come with at this point in December, which should afford us more chance to start Foden. Basically, he's started very, very few Premier League games. He does get minutes, and I think sometimes the clamour for him to play games, it comes with a sort of criticism and it hints at the fact that he doesn't get enough minutes. But actually, for a 19-year-old, he's up there compared to anybody else's age playing in the top league. So I'm not too concerned that he's being held back too much, but he now has a chance to play first team football in reasonably pressure-free environments. It's never going to be fully pressure-free, but without the fear that playing a kid who's not that experienced is going to cost us anything. It's just not now. One of Pep's regularly stated reasons for holding him back, despite calling him the most talented young player that he's ever worked with, which I would imagine made a certain Messi's ears prick up. But anyway, despite Pep saying stuff like that, he also says, quite rightly, that at the moment, the likes of De Bruyne, Silva, Gundogan are better players than Foden. And of course they are, because they've got bags and bags of experience, as well as incredible talent. So of course they're going to be better than an 18, 19-year-old kid trying to break into that team. But on current form, I don't think you could reasonably say that David Silva is a better option than Foden now, because And this breaks my heart to say, because you've listened to me for years, wax lyrical about David Silva whenever I can. He is, his form has quite severely dropped. And that's not to say that I want him completely out of the team or anything like that, because of course I don't. And it's going to be a sad day at the end of the season when he wears a City shirt for the last time. But it is time to start. I mean, Foden is the heir to his position. So it's time to start making that change and making that transition, rather than keep playing Silva and getting these sort of diminishing returns from him, when we've got a kid who is, anybody can see he's outrageously talented. You could see it from the moment that he first stepped onto the pitch with the first team, because he's got what so few players have, and to me is one of the first signs that I look for of real quality. He's got complete composure on the pitch. He's completely at home. And when he gets the ball, much like David Silva has always had, it doesn't matter how tight a space he's in, he somehow seems to have all the time in the world. And that's it's a real mark of potential greatness, that. And there's no doubt that used properly, he's going to be a central part of, and assuming that he stays, which I sort of think he will do being a City fan, but he's going to be a key part of that team for a long, long time to come. And I just hope that we start to see more of him. It's not a clamour for him to start every game. It's not that, I think he should have started at weekend or anything like that, but there is now reason to give him Premier League starts, rather than letting it hit in the summer that we've suddenly not got David Silva. Now Phil Foden needs to suddenly be ready to play 50 games a season. No, put him in now. It'll give the fans something to get behind, because everybody loves a homegrown player, and particularly one with that's one of our own, to steal a line. I hope to see a lot more of him. He's a very, very exciting player, and born and bred City fan. So it would lift us from this current dark mood that has dawned on City fans over the weekend.
Speaking of Phil Foden, you have an upcoming match against Dinamo Zagreb in Croatia midweek. Would you expect him to get a start there? And what else do you think we'll see in that match?
I said Kiev earlier, didn't I? Shame on me. Yes, I think Foden will start in that game. Like I say, it's a dead rubber. It doesn't mean a whole lot. I would imagine, we'll see Mahrez as well. I would really hope to see Eric Garcia. I'd sort of, in a weird way, and this is something you'll probably never hear me say again, but I would hope to see Claudio Bravo, because obviously we've already seen what an injury to Ederson does, and he picked one up in a previous Champions League game and then missed the game at Anfield. And Bravo is not an effective standing for big games or for league games, so I'd rather just reduce the risk of an injury to Ederson by giving Bravo this game, and I do think that Pep will do that, unless he decides to let Kyle Walker reprise his Champions League goalkeeping role, which would be fun at least, to give me a real reason to watch that game. Of course I will be watching anyway, and yeah, I think it will be a chance to see the City in a pressure-free environment. There's not going to be a weak team out by any stretch, but in terms of talented youngsters, Foden and Garcia have to start this one, because it's different. It's a different condition for them to play in. It's always great to get a Champions League game under your belt, I think, for any young player. But they'll still be playing with, I'd imagine that we're still going to see Jesus. We're still going to see probably two of David Silva, Bernardo Silva, and De Bruyne. So they get to play with really, really talented players, and that's a great way to be bedded in, and a chance, hopefully, for them to prove to Pep that they should be in contention for league games. But in terms of intensity of the game, I'm not expecting it to be an overly entertaining affair, because these dead rubber Champions League games, I think, rarely tend to be. But it'll be interesting nonetheless to see how they bounce back from the weekend disappointment.
Yeah, and then Steve, Tottenham have won against Bayern Munich that could have been very big and important, but turns out not so much, as both of us have already clinched our spots in the next round thanks to the makeup of our group. We've heard from Jose Mourinho that when asked if Troy Parrott would start, he said Harry Kane wouldn't. But aside from that, what do you expect for that match?
Well, you know, this is the sort of game that Mourinho loves. You know, the pressure's completely off. We can go in. Anything we do that where we don't lose by five goals is making amends for the last time. You know, he came in and he basically, we won one Champions League game, which qualified us for the knockout stages. So he was riding a wave that Poch had already created there. So yeah, there's no pressure absolutely on us. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Parrott gets a start. Oliver Skip as well, possibly, you never know. I would imagine Sessegnon might feature, even if he doesn't start. It's one of those games where, because there's no expectation, Mourinho might well try to, you know, go out and make a statement in this game, given that this is the last sort of time that the other European clubs will see us before February. So, again, like City, I don't expect a game of great intensity. I can see goals in it, but I certainly don't think it'll be a replay of the previous game.
Which was ridiculous. And as soon as Poch was let go and the rumor started in Germany, I was worried that this match would be Poch for Bayern versus Jose for Tottenham. Fortunately, we have dodged that potential fate. But yeah.
Oh, that'll come up at some point. I don't know in whose dugout Poch will be sitting, but I know that situation will arise at some point.
Probably so. With the fairly ominous "he hopes to see us soon" message. It's like, ooh, not sure I'm looking forward to that, but fair enough. All right, well, that will do it for us today. Thanks so much to you two for coming on. If you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
I'm Steve McGookin. You can get me on Twitter at Steve McGookin or at New York Spurs. You can follow the conversation there. For my non-football work, go to northernslant.com.
Yeah, thank you for listening. I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns, and I am a member of the Blue Moon podcast, which is a dedicated Manchester City podcast. It is released every Friday. We have again been nominated for a Football Supporters Federation Award for the best club podcast. So if you need a reason to listen to it, hopefully that endorsement is one of them. And we also have a blog where you can read the thoughts of myself and our host David Mooney for a nominal $2 a month, which helps keep us going. And we're on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
And I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. Also, be sure to check out the championship show that goes up weekly on this channel as well. Thanks again to you guys. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.